It's been a rough couple of years for Wisconsin industrial sand or frac sand industry. Prices for their product have dropped, demand had tanked, and a number of companies were forced to shutter mines and lay off workers. But oil prices are rising again, and some in the industry are excited that 2017 might be a year of recovery or even record highs. We'll talk about that with industry experts, and of course we'll take your calls this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW. Joining me in studio is Rich Buttinger. He is the operations manager for Fairmont Santrol, which has sand mines in processing facilities in Menominee and Maiden Rock. Also, he is a spokesman for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association and basically has been the face for WISA for some time now. Rich Buttinger, welcome back to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. And joining us by phone is Samir Nangia. He is an oil field services analyst with global investment analysis firm IHS. It is a major player in the industry, and Samir has spent countless hours studying the oil field services industry, which also includes proppant, also known locally here as frac sand, but there are different kinds of proppants. Samir Nangia, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rich.
My pleasure to have you. And listeners, we want to hear from you. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment about the frac sand industry and about oil prices. Let us know. 800-228-5615. So, Samir, I'll start off. I want to kind of get a recap of what happened in the last couple of years, because most people don't follow it like you, and I've tried to keep up with what I can, but there was quite a fluctuation in stock prices for some of the publicly traded companies, and also from reports from IHS, I saw that the prices and the demand for industrial sand used for fracking really took a dive. What happened, and it seemed to start in towards the end of the year 2014.
Right, Rich, and I think really we've had oil prices being the primary reason why things have fluctuated. Oil prices, as you know, macro factor, and we can get into the factors that impacted oil prices more a little bit later, but really drilling and completion activity followed the same trajectory as oil prices did, and 2014 is when oil prices started to decline, and we saw a meaningful decline in completion activity, which is when frac sand is used. So 2015, we had a decline, and in 2016, we had an even steeper decline. Just in terms of magnitude, IHS estimates that in the year 2014, approximately 60 million short tons of sand were used as proppant. The comparable number for 2016 is closer to 35 million short tons. So that just tells you that demand really came down during this time period, and it was mostly due to lower oil prices and lower fracking activity as a result of those lower prices.
Those are some stark numbers, a big change there. Real quickly, for folks that might not know, completion, when you talk about completions, what do you mean?
Right, great question. So that is the part when you actually will frack the well, and that's when you will use proppant, and in this particular case, frac sand.
Okay. And I remember at the time, back in 2014, the news was that the OPEC, which is the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, said that they were going to increase production. And it didn't sound like they increased it a lot, but did that play a role in what happened with oil prices?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, once again, you know, we have a separate oil team that can, you know, really get into the nuances of all the reasons why Saudi right. Arabia decided to increase oil production at that time. But, you know, I'll just go over the two that I hear most commonly within our company. The first one was, of course, to lower oil prices to slow down the growth in shale was one reason. And then the other was the greater geopolitical considerations that they have with Iran and Russia.
And so, in a nutshell, would it be too simple to say that part of their goal was to kind of injure or maybe even kill off the American fractured drilling market, the shale market?
Yes, it sounds like that was part of their goal. But let's not forget about what happened to demand here as well, right? So China accounts for maybe 60-70% of the growth in oil demand, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the Chinese economy slowed down, and as a result, we didn't quite see the same growth in demand from China as the market expected. So we had something going on the demand side, and then, of course, we had something going on the supply side. And lo and behold, 2 years later, the opposite is true, right? Demand is growing again because, well, cheap oil helps people to consume more. So mm-hmm. we are seeing more oil consumption here in the U.S. as well as in some of the emerging markets. And of course, on the supply side, now we finally have an agreement on the OPEC side, but lower oil prices have also taken their toll on supply in the out years.
Now, you mentioned Iran and Russia. Now, I remember speaking with you before, there was some concern that once there was the nuclear agreement with Iran that helped lift some of the sanctions off the country, and there were concerns that among oil-producing countries that they were going to start flooding the market again. And how does – is that right? And also, what role does Russia play in here?
Right. Both great questions, Rick. And what I would say is that, again, you know, we have a separate oil team that might be able to give more of the nuances on this. But you know, just to address the Iran question, I think what is commonly understood is that Iran could – really bulk up their production back to whatever the levels were 20, 30 years ago when they used to be a true rival to Saudi Arabia. But it'll take a lot of investment in their oil and gas infrastructure in order to meaningfully boost production. So I think within IHS and, you know, most of the experts do agree that it'll take a lot of investments to meaningfully increase Iran's production.
It's not as simple as turning the taps on, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Sure. Now, Rich Buttinger, I want to get you in on this. You can speak generally for the industry because you've got eyes and ears, like anyone else, on what's happening. As all this stuff was playing out internationally, what were we seeing here in Wisconsin, western Wisconsin?
So here in Wisconsin, tremendous amount of growth in industrial sand mining over the last 5-6 years.
Yeah,
even going back even further, 2005, 2006, a little bit of a growth as well. But we've seen a huge growth in our industry, and it's primarily been due to one market. Even though industrial sand covers many markets here in Wisconsin, but the one market, which is the hydrofracking, frac sand's going into many areas within the United States and also within North America. So with the recent downturn, what we look at is our industry is very cyclical. This recent downturn is another cycle, even though it's a little bit deeper and a little bit longer. It's gaining a lot more attention than the past cycles. But I could go back 2012, 2009 during the recession was probably the last significant downturn. 2012, we had a small one, maybe not as much as that required any kind of downturn or shuttering, idling of facilities like this recent one. So back in 2014, OPEC's impact on the world market did directly affect industrial sand mining here in Wisconsin and other places in the upper Midwest, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota. There's also a significant amount of sand mining going on there as well. So back in 2014, 2015, and then, you know, continuing into 2016, we've seen continued declines in sand volumes coming out of the region. And because of that, a lot of plants had to idle their operations. But some good news just recently, we've seen quite a few operations in Wisconsin come back online. So that's some positive news.
Now, I talked with Rick Shearer. He's the CEO of Superior Silica Sands. It's a Texas-based company, but they've got operations in Barron, Chippewa County, also an operation or two in Trempealeau County. And I noticed stock prices were kind of surging for these companies last week, actually. And he wasn't able to join us for the program today, but I've got some clips that I would like to play to give us some more context here. Also, a reminder, listeners, if you want to call in with questions or comments, the number is 1-800-228-5615. We're talking about the frac sand industry in Wisconsin. Some are saying that there might be a recovery, even some record highs. That's what Rick is going to lead into here. 1-800-228-5615. What are you hearing? What are you expecting 2017 to look like? Or are we turning a corner?
Rich, I think we really are. We were optimistic for the last 45 days or so. We were hearing from our customers that they were going to ratchet up their budgets for next year and do more drilling. They were, of course, planning to hire more crews. So when you couple that optimistic story with the fact that as this technology has evolved to do more hydraulic horizontal drilling, that the proppant intensity is continuing to go up. You know, that is using more frac sand for each well drilled, and by a significant amount, 20% to 30%. Everybody was expecting for frac sand demand to increase substantially next year. And believe me, it's been a very difficult down cycle for everybody in the industry. But we've seen recently in the last 60 days or so an uptick in business. And now with the OPEC announcement that just came out yesterday, let's hope that they will indeed be able to discipline themselves and cut oil production by a million half barrels a day or so. That's even more reason for the market to feel very bullish going forward. So as a result of that, this is good news. It does look like the numbers will increase substantially at Superior Silica Sands. We're thinking that the market will probably be about 33 to 35 million tons of frac sand in 2016, and we think there's a very good likelihood that the frac sand demand in 2017 will be at least 50 to 55 million. So that would take us back to 2014 levels, as you mentioned.
That's Rick Shearer. That was an interview recorded last week. So I wanted to talk, I wanted to ask Samir, Samir Nangi of IHS. I know that your outlook and the for the proppant IQ is a little more guarded than that. And what do you think? Do you think it's possible that we could see levels of demand for sand or prices or what have you in 2017 that we saw in 2014?
That's a great question. So first of all, I'll caveat by saying that when we published our last numbers, which was approximately 3 months ago, this deal still hadn't come in. So when we publish our next update, which will be in early January, I'm quite sure even our numbers will be higher. But just by way of comparison, we actually saw 2014 levels at approximately 60 million short tons. And we, our estimates right now for next year are closer to 45 million tons.
Okay.
So I would say that Rick's number in the 50 to 55 million ton category are definitely achievable. You know, we could surpass 2014 levels, in our opinion, perhaps a little bit later, maybe in 2018. But regardless, in either case, we are within 10% of the high achieved in 2014. And if I could caveat that just a little bit,
yeah.
So, I mean, you know, just for viewers. So if oil prices go up, that really does indeed help the U.S. shale producers. We have break-evens that have really come down across the U.S. This is due to use of cheaper fracking technology, i.e. slick water fracks that require less chemicals. And then, of course, we've seen some serious service cost deflation. So the net result being that there are parts of the U.S. where it is profitable to drill and frack at $40 to $45. Now, again, most people will tell you that that's not sustainable and those are kind of half-cycle kind of costs. But still, if we could see $55 to $60, that would be enough to see a lot more activity. And I think that's the reason why the entire industry is so much more positive on the outlook for shale for 2017.
As an observer here, I couldn't help but feel really amazed at how the technology has been changing from what my conversations with you, Samir, and others, that these drilling companies have been able to really do it for much less. They've found out a lot of efficiencies, and the same thing with the sand producers. It seems like the numbers that 2 years ago, the break-even cost was, I thought it was $60, $70, and now it's dropped by $20 nearly, right?
Yeah, that's actually a great observation. And, you know, we can probably, again, you know, we've done a lot of detailed research on all of these reasons, and I would probably come up with three broad buckets to really capture most of it. So one is, as you said, improvements in technology. The second one is high grading. So, you know, during the downturn, everybody, as in all the E&Ps, reverted to their best rocks, their best acreage, right? So whatever their sweet spot was, that's all they wanted to drill and frack in. They didn't want to go into the marginal areas. And then the third category, of course, is service cost deflation. So service costs from peak to trough went down by something like 45%. So that also really helped to lower costs. So, you know, just if you had to break it down in terms of the order of magnitude, I would say high grading, which is pretty much reverting to your best rock, as well as service cost deflation, have the highest magnitude order. And then the third category, of course, is technology, which continues to give us benefits every year. But that's more incremental. I would say the first two really accounted for the bulk of the drop in break-even costs.
And Rich Buttinger, as far as technology, one of the things that drillers have found recently is that, and recently I say within the last 5 years or so, it seems like they've learned that a lot more sand produces a lot more oil out of these wells. And I know Samir has mentioned this, and Rick Shearer at Superior Silica CEO Sands was talking about 20-30% more sand per wells, per each well. And that's what does that do to demand, even in a low market, for sand from Wisconsin?
Well, you know, that's going to obviously help demand. If the well count, the drilling count is directly related to how much sand is being used, then the drill count will directly correlate with the volume. Now that we're seeing drill counts stabilize, but more sand going into the market, that's a sign of increased efficiencies, cost reduction. Some of the factors that Shamir was talking about with how we're able to get to a lower cost and a lower break even number for the volume, and you know it's just proving that you know we're adapting to the economic environment, not only national environment but a worldwide market, and that just is continuing to prove that we're gaining more and more energy independence. Mm-hmm. Which has a tremendous amount of positives. We aren't depending on foreign oil as much. And the energy itself is cleaner. The natural gas that's being produced and being used for conversion into electricity is a very positive and is decreasing overall greenhouse gas.
That's not to say people aren't concerned with more drilling or more even sand mining here in Wisconsin. We'll get to some of those concerns a little later in the program. Samir, just for scale, just for context, how much sand is going into each of these wells, comparatively speaking, you know, today versus a few years back? I remember hearing a number from you, and it just floored me when I heard the tonnage.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, in 2011, I remember looking at numbers. it was approximately 4 million pounds of sand per horizontal well. The comparable number today is more than 8 million pounds per horizontal well. Now, what's happening is obviously that these E&P operators are drilling longer and longer laterals, right? Yeah. Once upon a time, 3,000 feet was considered pretty good. Today, 7,500 feet is pretty common, and the outliers are greater than 10,000 feet. And so the same thing in terms of sand, that the average has moved up to 8, 8.5, but the outliers, once upon a time, you know, when EOG used to do wells using approximately 10 million pounds per well, people used to be wowed by that number.
Yeah.
But the outliers today are more than 20 million pounds. So it seems like this trend just continues to increase, and it's increasing because we are drilling longer laterals, and also we are packing in more sand per foot in terms of proppant intensity. But I would say two things to that. The first one is that we do seem to be reaching the limits of how much proppant intensity we can do. So, you know, it's close to 1,500 pounds to 2,000 pounds per foot now. And it seems that there's no incremental hydrocarbon benefit beyond perhaps, you know, 2,500. Now, again, you know, it varies by play. And again, we've got a lot of details for anyone that's interested on that. But just generally speaking, it's hard now to go from, you know, you could go from 1,500 or 2,000 to 2,500, but it's not likely you'll see the same benefit going from 1,500 to 3,000.
Okay.
The other thing that I would say is that only the best rock benefits from the greater use of proppant. So along with high grading, which is one of the factors I had mentioned earlier, we've also seen much greater proppant intensity. And again, the two go hand in hand, right? It's only when you have the best rock that it makes sense to spend all that money up front to put in more sand and more water and more chemicals, because, you know, if you do that, then you get much greater hydrocarbons at the back end.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't work if you're working in the marginal shale areas. It only works when you're working in the best shale areas.
Okay.
So that's one of the things to be a little careful about, that as oil prices go higher, we could also see E&Ps drilling in perhaps slightly more marginal areas, and perhaps you could see some of that proppant intensity come down a little bit.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, with that, let's take our first break. We've got a caller on the line, Willem in Colfax. Hold tight. We'll get to your question or comment after our break. We're talking about the industrial sand mining or frac sand mining industry here in western Wisconsin. And some are saying that the market could be rebounding after a two-year lull in demand and a two-year low in terms of prices per ton of sand. Good news for the industry. Also, there's a lot of concerns out there. If you've got a question or a comment, 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. This is the West Side. We'll be back in just a bit.
Support for WPR is provided by the WHA Radio Arts Programming Endowment Fund, providing funds to help WPR bring quality educational and entertainment programs, like A Prairie Home Companion, to Wisconsin Public Radio listeners.
The 38th Annual Arts West Juried Art Show comes to the Ellie Phillips Library in February. Wisconsin artists and students 18 or older are eligible to submit work between now and January 4th. Information at the library by phone and online at ecpubliclibrary.com.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about industrial sand mining and its role in the grand scheme of America's oil and natural gas drilling industries. After 2 years of stagnant demand, we're seeing a lot of companies come out of hibernation, really. Some plants, including Hi-Crush, Fairmont Santrol was one, Superior Silica, have increased their operations. They've brought workers back. It's good for the local economy. Also, it raises some concerns among folks who are worried that increased activity like this might be harmful for the environment. 1-800-228-5615. I'm joined on the phone. We've got Samir Nangia. He's an oil field services analyst with global investment firm. IHS, and Rich Buttinger is with us in studio. He's the operations manager for Fairmont Santral, and he's also a spokesman for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. 1-800-228-5615. Willem and Colfax, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to make a few comments about the comments that have been made, if you allow me a few minutes to make that comment. The first comment, I think this is a talking point by the oil and gas industry about how this is going to lead to American energy independence, where before the man mentioned that part of the drop in demand was because of China's slowing economy, which illustrates that this is not anything to do with American energy independence. Oil is traded on a world market, and the companies that trade in it are international conglomerates. And the real independence for our country would be things that can be traded or exported, like the wind and the sun.
Okay.
And other, using our land to grow biofuels and things like that. That's real energy independence. The rest is just a talking point. But in the industry, I'm sure they're happy, and the investors are happy, and some of the landowners who are profiting it are happy. But the rest of us, the people who have our whole environment and our whole communities and our whole the way that things have always been in this state are changed, and things like property values. There's many properties that are sitting unsold, and the reason they're unsold is because the uncertainty about the return of certain sand mining projects and how that's going to affect. Like, why would you want to buy a house if it's going to be, close to a sand mine? So it has real-world effects on real estate values. And then the other thing is that it's not good for the environment to take down trees which trap carbon and replace it by huge strip-mined areas. During this bust, there are these huge piles of sand that are sitting around blowing in the breeze. And no matter what they say, I know that silica is a carcinogen, and when it blows around, it's not a good thing to have more silica blowing around in the atmosphere. So,
sure.
The industry, I'm sure it's good for them and it's good for the investors, but the people who live here, it's going to impact our lives and the lives of future generations to come.
All right. Well, great points, Willem. Thank you so much for your call. If anyone else has questions or comments, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. I want to break this up into a couple pieces here. First, I think Willem was responding, Rich Buttinger, to your comment about energy independence. And, what about his argument that we're becoming, you said we're becoming energy independent from, I would imagine you're talking about imports from oil-producing countries like in the Middle East. But Willem says we can't be truly independent from the whole oil market until we go with solar or wind. What are your thoughts to that?
Well, the energy independence that I'm referring to is the amount of oil and gas reserves that were unlocked through the technology of the horizontal drilling technology. Mm-hmm. So the ability to extract oil and natural gas economically and in areas that weren't able to be drilled before. And so that created more of a how much gas does North America or does the United States have versus how much we need, and then how much do we depend on foreign countries for that supply. So as we've been able to tap into higher volumes that weren't accessible previously, that decreases our dependence on volumes coming from outside the United States.
Mm-hmm. And Samir Nangi, I was wondering, in terms of production, was it true that the U.S. at one point, or maybe even still, in terms of oil production, not even speaking about natural gas, but rivaled Saudi Arabia or surpassed Saudi Arabia during the mad rush for fracture drilling in the U.S. leading up to 2014?
I guess the numbers were similar. I guess, the numbers that I'm thinking about are closer to 10 million barrels, and I think Saudi at their peak was at about 11.
Okay.
So regardless of, what the point estimates were, I think the point is well taken that, the U.S. still produces almost as much as Saudi Arabia. And, obviously with this production cut announced, it's entirely possible that the U.S. or likely, I should say now, could exceed that 10 to 11 million number. The one thing I would say about, you know, what can be traded, therefore, I mean, you know, I must say that I do not follow that argument. Just because oil is traded on a commodity or natural gas is doesn't mean that we're not cutting our dependence on volatile regions across the world.
Sure.
Right? So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is it would be erroneous to say that those same global supply chains are not in effect for wind as well as solar. So, I mean, you know, I used to be a former electric utilities analyst, and I can tell you that most of the solar cells, for example, are manufactured in China. And I can tell you that most of the wind turbines, once again, are manufactured using global supply chains where, you know, probably the domestic content is less than 20 or 25%. Mm. And the investors, it's very curious. There's a lot of these tax equity investors that are required for all these green investments. And again, that's also a global supply chain. So all that I would say is that it's probably a global supply chain on both sides. But you know, the caller's point about how some of those sources are renewable is well taken.
Understood. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. I wanted to talk about just kind of close up the chapter on the downturn that we saw and that we seem to be climbing out of. And I wanted to talk about some E&Ps or oil drillers, as I call them, like a, you know, the novice that I am in the lingo here, but some of them seem to be shying away from Wisconsin sand for various reasons. And maybe could you walk us through that, Samir? I know when the profit margins were very low, there were some concerns about transportation costs because getting Wisconsin sand, while it is considered some of the best in the nation, it's not easy to get it to where you need to get it to. Is that right?
That's absolutely right, Rich. So the cost of sand at the frack site, approximately 60% of that actually comes due to transportation and handling. Even though the Wisconsin sand does have the best quality, or I should just say Midwest sand in general, has some of the highest quality that we need for fracking, there are other deposits of sand closer to the fracking. So, for example, in Texas, there's a bunch of mines, and then, of course, Arkansas is also closer, as is Mississippi, and they have reasonable sand deposits as well. And once again, the reason that people have been shying away from using Wisconsin sand is simply a matter of cost. It's easier if you can simply get the sand from Texas and truck it to your site and bypass the rail system altogether, which results in significant cost.
Right. And also, so brown sand, which is kind of, you mentioned from Texas or other states, lower quality, less crush strength, less uniformity. But wasn't there also some discussion among drillers that, hey, this stuff, if you use it right, it gets similar effects? Or is that, because I mentioned that to Rick Shear, and he said there was a school of thought on that, but that seems to have shifted back to preferring the northern white sand, which comes from Wisconsin and Minnesota and other states, when you can afford it.
I think you bring up a good point, but I think there is a lot of debate within the technical community on that. There are many companies like Pioneer Energy Resources that use brown sand, and you know they have great results as well. And they are big proponents of brown sand. But with that said, the majority of the E&Ps that we've spoken with still continue to show a preference for white sand, and that is the case with most completion engineers as well. They do believe that the northern white sand will result in better production over the life of the well. But I think it might be safe to say that we haven't seen the tail on a lot of these wells that were completed with brown sand, let's say in 2015 and 16. Mm. And we'll learn more about this in a couple of years as to, you know, just what the impact is on production a couple of years down the line.
And with that, let's start talking about briefly about some of the encouraging signs. We've already mentioned a little bit of this, but before the program, I was speaking with Rich Budinger here in the studios, and of course, we found out that OPEC last week mentioned that they would be cutting production by about $1 million per million barrels, excuse me, of oil per day. Which globally might not sound like a lot, but it's a very psychological boost that for the industry. Also, we were talking about NOPEC, and are you familiar with the OPEC and the NOPEC announcements, Samir?
Oh, so you mean the non-OPEC cut of approximately 600,000 barrels?
Exactly.
A day as well?
So you've got you've got the OPEC countries pulling back, also a lot of other oil producing countries outside of the cartel or the outside of the organization are doing the same, right?
Right. Yeah, this is definitely positive for the global demand supply imbalance. It's my understanding that with these, as you said, OPEC and NOPEC cuts combined in the year 2017, we will finally have a situation where, you know, demand is greater than supply, and we can have an opportunity to soak up some of that excess inventory that is sitting on the sidelines.
Right. So there's a lot of sand that's available. Rich Budinger, I know you can't speak very specifically since you're a publicly traded company, but there's a lot of supply ready to go out in Wisconsin from what you're hearing from members in WISA?
As far as sand volumes?
Sand volumes, yeah.
I don't necessarily think that that's – I mean, there's a limited capability to hold volume of finished sand.
Okay, but there's a lot in the ground ready to go.
Yeah, there's as far as geology, I mean, Wisconsin still continues to be a very large area you know, for industrial sand deposits. There's four formations in in Wisconsin, but you know, it's not to exclude other states within the upper Midwest as well. So, you know, Minnesota, Iowa, and also northern Illinois share in that, and some of the other deposits that are still considered to be high quality, I mean, can go as far down as Missouri and Arkansas also.
Okay. So there are a lot of reserves ready to be tapped.
Correct.
I guess.
Yeah, and yeah. And you know, that's something that we've always been mindful of as far as where the sand is coming from. Rail lines have a lot to do with you know, where the mines are sited. But you know, Minnesota has several active mines as well, and Illinois, the Northern White, which is, you know, the high quality sands. You know, this is something that's been mined for many, many decades. And in Wisconsin, it's part of the rich mining history, and you could trace industrial sand mining back over 100 years. Glass sand, foundry sands. And then most recently, the growth has been tied to hydraulic fracturing. So in the last decade, and then very specifically, you know, 2011, 2012, where we saw a lot of mines coming online. Yeah. In the upper Midwest and specifically in Wisconsin, you know, the frac sand market, one of the many markets that is fed by industrial sand, was responsible for the massive growth.
Very quickly, I wanted to follow up with you. We just saw some news from across the border in Minnesota, very close to where your operations are down on the Wisconsin side.
Winona County. Yes.
Winona County outright banned any new industrial sand operations in the county. And who knows if this will get tied up in the courts. It's really substantial. We saw something similar to this in Pepin County, where there was a strip of land where frac sand mining or industrial sand mining was basically banned through some regulations. But Minnesota, so does this what does the industry think, or what are companies thinking about this? I mean, are they looking at Wisconsin closer now if they're thinking about opening up operations?
Well, you know, that discussion on industrial sand and the impacts of industrial sand mining, you know, has been a pretty hot topic, you know, during this growth phase.
Yeah.
Specifically, but it's also been a discussion for many, many decades before that as well. And the result has been a very strict regulation that's been in place for many, many years. You go back to the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act that the EPA delegates to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and over in Minnesota, it's the MPCA that regulates, and also some counties have regulatory authority over that as well. So, you know, depending on where you are and the impacts of mining and what's been going on in the local conversation, you know, regulations are there to protect the communities, to protect the environment. And so the issues that were brought up in Winona, I don't believe that the county acted appropriately to those issues. I believe that enforcement of the existing regulations would have continued to address those issues and continued to protect the communities where those mines are and the environment where they're operating.
Do you think that'll have a chilling effect on new mines going up in Minnesota?
You know, that's a great question. We'll see how that conversation continues in Minnesota. But I know in Wisconsin, you know, part of the goals of the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association is to continue to have a positive conversation about our industry and to work with regulatory agencies identifying any future need for regulations. And right now, the science and the fact-based discussion is very positive, and regulations cover our industry, and we're very, very strictly regulated, both at the local level as well as the federal level.
With that, let's take our final break here on the West Side. When we come back, we'll wrap up the discussion about what our frac sand experts here think might be happening in terms of the market for 2017. Also, we've got some discussion about regulations, and there's a study, a couple recent developments with regard to the Department of Natural Resources here in Wisconsin. 1-800-228-5615. This is the West Side.
We like to match our socks.
We try to match furnishings in our home.
We even match wits.
But has your employer matched your donation to Wisconsin Public Radio?
To see if your company has a matching gift program, go to WPR.org/support and click Matching Gifts.
Search to see if your company is listed or just contact your human resources department.
Thanks for the extra support.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin Carbone Cancer Center and its affiliate partners across the state and in Northern Illinois. On the web at uwhealth.org/cancer. Include WPR in your social mix. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for Wisconsin news, links, and photos from programs and hosts. Find all our social media links at wpr.org/community.
This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by Rich Buttinger. He works with Fairmont Santrol, an industrial sand company based in Wisconsin, or that has operations in Wisconsin. He's also a spokesman for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association, or WISA. Samir Nangia is an oilfield services analyst. He joins us by phone. He is with the global investment firm and analysis firm IHS. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or a comment, we could probably take a couple more before the top of the hour. Very quickly, we've already kind of teased it a little bit, Samir, and I wanted to go back to you. What are you thinking are going to be the big if factors for 2017 with regard to demand for proppant? We already mentioned that the OPEC thing is helpful. We mentioned that there's more sand going into each of these completions. We've also mentioned that when people can afford it, they prefer northern white sand from Wisconsin, Minnesota, and other states. So in a nutshell, what do you think is going to happen next year?
Right. I think everyone is now waiting to see what the E&P capex budgets look like for next year. So, you know, just along with oil prices, we've seen E&P capex budgets dramatically cut. But I think we've already seen an increase in the number of drilling rigs going out of work. That's kind of a forward indicator. Mm-hmm. So everyone is quite bullish on what we could expect to see in terms of E&P capex budgets for next year. So that would be the first major catalyst, in my opinion. The second thing to watch, Rich, would also be just how much of that activity is concentrated in the Permian versus, you know, just some of the other plays.
So the Permian, what location geographically are you talking about?
So we're mostly talking about, West Texas, and then, of course, a little bit of New Mexico thrown in as well.
Okay.
So, we are seeing perhaps half the rig count today focused on the Permian. So a lot of activity in the Permian, so a lot of drilling going on right now that will result in a lot of wells to be completed in the future. We also expect to see greater activity in some of the more mature plays, like, let's say, the Eagle Ford. But I think that's the other thing that the industry is waiting to watch to see that just where. So first one is, of course, how much activity? Mm-hmm. And then the second question would be, where is it? And is it, mostly just in the Permian?
Now, it's not off topic, but I'm just wondering what your take is, Samir. We saw a months of protests, and they're still happening in North Dakota regarding the Standing Rock Tribe and the oil pipeline coming from the Bakken area going through nearby, crossing a river nearby the reservation. A lot of protests. We saw the Army Corps of Engineers mention that they're not going to give a permit. There's talk of maybe diverting it. Just generally speaking, this kind of the protests and activism, is that something that folks in the E&P world are watching, and does that have any effect whatsoever on choices that they make on where to drill?
Rich, I would really like to defer that question to our midstream group, because I'm sure they've done much more detailed analysis of this.
Sure.
And I've basically just read everything in the newspaper that probably you have. So okay. I would like to defer that question to them.
Fair enough. And Rich Buttinger, we already talked about the local situation in Winona County, but. What do you think in general in terms of opposition to industrial sand mining, or just people that are concerned about it? There was a lot when the industry went from, it seemed like they went from 0 to 100 in Wisconsin within a few years. And naturally that made a lot of people upset. Has that tapered off, or do you think that it's still strong in terms of opposition, or what's the relationship between concerned citizens and industrial sand companies at this point?
Right. So I think in Wisconsin specifically, communities are still concerned about mining in general. When you start talking about very specific mining applications, whether it's, non-metallic mining, industrial sand mining, the metallic mining conversation continues to go as well. I think, legitimate concerns in the communities and statewide are being voiced. And I think that conversation is going to continue, no matter if we're, where we were before, or, if we double from the previous years. Those concerns are still out there. And, the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association, what we do is we promote responsible operation. But we also talk about, any need for future regulation according to impact. And what we're seeing right now is that, this is something that's been done in Wisconsin for many, many decades, and it's really nothing new. The size of which it's being mined, the size of the size overall size and volume coming out of the state is new. The growth is new.
Yeah.
But as we see the sand markets return, not exactly sure if we're going to call this a rebound. I mean, I think we've seen a few mines start back up that were idled. Maybe they're coming back in one shift instead of two. 5 days instead of seven, things of that nature, and so as the international market, kind of ebbs and flows. I mean, that may change locally here in Wisconsin as well. But I think there will always be concerns about manufacturing, concerns about industry. So I think industrial sand mining is not any different from other concerns of manufacturing process.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin, industrial sand mining, it's been bringing a positive economic benefit, jobs, and also, salaries being spent locally. So hopefully we continue to see jobs coming back. It's a very positive outlook, and we're looking forward to 2017.
With regard to environmental regulations or the regulatory environment for Wisconsin frac sand companies or industrial sand companies, there was a new permit specific for the first time, to my knowledge, there was a specific stormwater wastewater permit that was approved by the DNR specifically for industrial sand. So how closely did WESA work with the DNR on the new permit, and basically how is the industry responding to it? Because I know that now there's going to be some requirement, depending, there's all kinds of nuances here, but requirements to test for certain heavy metals, and that seemed to be one of the bigger takeaways, at least from my analysis of the new stormwater and wastewater permit. So what is the industry's reaction to that?
Correct. So, you know, the general permit, you know, industrial sand mining is considered to be non-metallic mining, and it was a little concerning when industrial sand was separated from non-metallic mining. And
why?
And I think the science and the facts about that separation have yet to be truly determined, and I think time will tell on the need to recombine those into one sector, non-metallic mining. And you know, the negative impacts, I think when we're out there gathering information, that those facts and that science will prove that, you know, it does not need to be separated into a different sector.
But what about the difference in scale? I mean, because the original, the Stormwater Wastewater Permit, or the WPDES is the acronym for it, was, a lot of folks would say it was written for gravel pits. It was written for smaller operations. It wasn't for this large-scale industrial. It's a different use, or
right.
A different.
Well, non-metallic mining, I mean, you know, you could look at varying operations in size, and depending on where they're located, you know, I can name a few limestone operations and sand and gravel operations that are much larger than any industrial sand
sure.
mining operation. So I think the size of these operations is irrelevant to the regulations that apply. It's going to apply to a small operation or a very large operation. I think the enforcement is the one thing that needs to be seriously looked at with the existing regulations.
Sure.
And I think a lot of the issues will be taken care of pretty quickly through proper enforcement, which the WDNR has been doing. They have been doing a great job keeping an eye on industrial sand mining operations as well as non-metallic mining operations in general.
And with regard to the enforcement of the existing prior to the new permit, staffing has been an issue at the DNR. Do you think DNR would be better off if they had more people to go out and enforce the regulations that were on the books?
Well, you know, that's the business of the department. They need to identify staffing requirements to enforce those regulations, but we have seen enforcement, and we've seen enforcement at a very high degree, and you know, deferrals to other agencies if need be for both
Department of Justice.
You know, clean water has been the concern, but the local permits also.
Well, with that, I wish we had more time to discuss this, but I appreciate our conversation from Samir Nangia of IHS and Rich Buttinger of Fairmont Santrol and WESA, the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. Next week, Dean Kallenbeck will be hosting. He'll be spending an hour looking into the world of winter tourism. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening.